probably somewhere about 5 minutes after that. So that's 5 to 5 is 5. Thanks a lot. The next presentation is my next. So we'll do the introduction and then when we do the presentation. It's a long day. So the let's continue. Let's get the presentation by next. It's not going to be long. I know I'm eating into their time now. It's not going to be long. As I said at the beginning, we're trying to get an overview. Immediately after this, we will, as the minister was proposing, we'll politely ask each one of them to see when we can see them again. To the most substantive discussion. The overview should be sufficient, especially for those of us who are dwelling.
Thanks, Chairman of the Portfolio Committee, we are here to make a presentation of next time. Here with me, I'm accompanied by Mr. President Salam, who is also CEO of NASA. And also to my left, I have Mr. Hicks. I'm wishing to thank Mr. Salam to make I'm sorry, I didn't say where am I?
Thank you, Chair, and Honourable Members. I'll share with you a brief outline of what NASA does, what the projects are, what our objectives that we will give out our mandate. The outline of the presentation starts with the mandate policy. We talk about some achievements. Then we talk about our projects, the NGF project, and of course the key project and our briefly on our finances, and then we'll talk about our key performance indicators. We derive our mandate from the Nuclear Energy Act, in terms of the Act, NASA should primarily be focused on resource development of the nuclear nation. NASA should handle restricted material and processes. And also enjoined by the Act to commercialize our outcome from the research and development. We have a primary function to also to operate the only research reactor in Tarapida, another one reactor, and of course manage other delegated functions such as safeguards, such as waste at this point, and also what the minister teaches. And you can make the policy next much clearer what NEXA is about. It was put in place in 2008, and it says NEXA should be an end company that aims to research, development, innovation for the Republic. It also says that NEXA will be encouraged to work in the development of the middle chain. This is from conversion to enrichment to fuel fabrication. And NEXA will undertake to lead the development of these functions. And indeed, NEXA endeavors to do that. Government through NEXA will investigate the viability of developing its own program, primarily the enrichment capability. The nuclear energy policy is also quite clear that government will intervene in Europe's FD6 or obtain access to establish fuel application program, and we are busy with that process. It of course also mentions that NEXA will be the incumbent or the representative for state in terms of the prime manufacturer market, commercialization, the selling and export of nuclear energy systems and services. Of course, positive with the participation of private sector. With alignment to government policy, from the minister and his department, we have to align ourselves to the national development plan, and indeed we are still aligned. We align ourselves to the provision of quality health care through the subsidiary of NEXA, the entity of radioisotope. We provide medication for the care and the diagnosis of that diseases in South Africa, and we export this product to more than 60 countries in the world. So not only do we contribute to the nation, but we contribute to the world. In terms of providing access to economy and creating more jobs and improving quality education, the NEXA through its subsidiary is an employer of high technical skills, and we also do training for artisans, welders, and electricians, and other skilled individuals. We also run postgraduate programs within the official institutional framework in collaboration with various institutions. Of course, we don't only utilize institutions closer to ourselves, even institutions in Cape Town, the UCT, and Stellenbosch are utilized to assist in this process. In terms of expanding infrastructure, NEXA is embarked on several key infrastructure programs of the supply of new fuel and target tanks. Of course, we're working very high. High energies on the Safari 2 multi-purpose reactor project. We have manufactured into high quality using the SME3 certification, which is the highest capability in terms of quality that anybody can achieve in terms of manufacturing. We have that capability. And of course, we are supplying from our mental service base, supplying equipment to UK companies actually in the world, primarily the US and Russia at this point. Of course, we have on our side, and then we'll be working on equipment that will be supplied to the South Korea. And of course, we have a data center that is central to what we do. Transition to a low carbon economy. We live in a carbon-constrained world, and nuclear is a primary contributor in terms of reducing emissions of carbon, and in our work we contribute to this. We contribute to South Africa and the Southern African region, Africa and the world in terms of products that we produce. We contribute in terms of our association with international atomic energy agencies to contribute to South America, the region, and Africa, central, removing isotopes that are utilized on the inter side today, as an example. In terms of other government programs of action, we contribute to outcome 2, 4, 3, of course, in terms of our activities. And I've already mentioned that NPT radio isotopes is the primary contributor here. And of course, for outcome 4, we have both NPT and Pelican contributing in terms of sales and products to balance the to contribute to our balance of payment. In terms of outcome 5, in terms of skills, we do training, was not only training, but we do testing for the government in terms of check them. You would know that this aspect of work in terms of check testing has left our capability as a nation. And the next is hard to say we are bringing that capability by offering ourselves as a decentralized big tech center. In terms of visitor progress, we've already mentioned, but of course we have undergraduate and postgraduate that are associated with next in terms of the research project, in terms of the exploration training internship program, we are assisting in that area. In terms of outcome 6, some speech talked about an efficient, competitive, and responsive infrastructure network. We're contributing to this through our ESME 3 and 8 certification, and also through our other projects that we're working on. And of course, some 10 talked about environmental access and natural resource protected and regional enhanced. We're working closely with partners in the industry to achieve this. Outcome 11. We talked about the creation of a better South Africa by contributing to a better and safer world. Our contribution here is in association with partners such as the IAEA and other nation agencies. Alignment to IPEC. We recently formed a company called ESAPEL. This company seeks to develop the active ingredient of antiretroviral drugs. The intention is to reduce the cost of producing the very essential medication. And then, of course, it's not from mandate of the network. We only realized that we could do it. And then we handed it over to the Department of Science and Technology, IDC, the spearhead to go forward. We remain interested at a very slow, low percentage because we don't think it's our fault, but we think that we have the capability to assist in terms of the energy. In terms of nuclear energy, we participate in working groups and discussions and plans with the department and other entities. We contribute to the fifth in three areas, electricity expansion, higher education infrastructure and economic opportunities. Network achievement in the period, we've made some key achievements in the research and development area. I must, Chairperson, apologize for the type of words I'm using neutron plane scanning. I don't know how much I need to explain this. But this is very important, it's an instrument that is very important in terms of utilization of the reactor and also putting samples into the laboratory. We head up IAEA fellowship training for South Africa, and we've recently trained an Egyptian national who will be going back to Egypt shortly. To enrich that country in terms of the knowledge of applying that is got from the family in terms of applying it to their own research here. The next installation of a plasma waste to energy trailer is a very important achievement for us. What this is, we have capability in plasma heat, and we plan which material to produce energy using is a very important contributor in terms of our energy infrastructure. Of course, we have contractual relationships of a research fund with other entities in the South African space, including Garo and from point to point, SASO as well. Well, other achievements relate to the microfiber X-ray-based micro tomography. Chair, the latest of tomography composed about 3D images using neutron tests, and of course we work with universities and other entities such as the Venice Trans Institute to image very critical aspects. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because we're just taking care. And of course, the whole commissioning testing of the new neutral green light is very important for us. I'll move on, Chair. That we have first study subject of 6 others that we share and using the position emission tomography to be able to detect in our children. So that you take we need to make sure that the therapy is properly so that they can receive the right treatment. And we think our method can achieve a great deal in this area. And of course, we have a 24 strategy currently working in our program, in our safety program, which is a partnership between NEFSA and the Climate Science Authority. The response to the technology of the agreement. And we want to emphasize this because there is a shortage of females in the data practice. And this one is very important that we will make a breakthrough there. I hope we can keep all of us just keeping females in this area. The Vienna-based Comprehensive Center for the Education has agreed to work with NEFSA, and indeed we located the site here in Cape Town, where we will be monitoring for tests of the human nature in case somebody is staying true in the world, in the regulated area of safety. NEFSA has undertaken the training of interns in collaboration with various organizations. Some are important is the teacher, the chair, who we are in partnership with. We work with Automat teacher to ensure that we can train these apprentices and we can make sure that they've got the right, not only theoretical training, but they also have the experiential training that we can offer. In terms of our international collaboration, NEFSA is working with CCBTO, as we will continue to collaborate in an international forum with other people that are doing R&D in the media area. This is essential because other nations have got experiences that we don't have, and as we collaborate with them, we become their share. And of course, we established a new company in Belgium called NTPS Europe, which started operating in February last year, and increases our footprint to be able to sell our product in a very big market that is Europe. The collaboration between our subsidiary and the Reliance Group with Ansto, which is a replica that sits in Australia or NEFSA. In terms of our co-program, the nuclear power cluster, our focus is to establish the nuclear manufacturing center. This is essentially established. To grow it and to make sure that it is the benefit that we take. We are implementing the healthcare strategy for growth and sustainability. Healthcare is our subsidiary that is in the chemical industry. It is the primary beneficiator of fluorspar, which we mine in Taranta. Taranta is one of the few countries that has a mine of fluorspar. And we think it's very important for us to beneficiate this product. and of course I'll spend a few minutes on this, I that no successful economy or let me put it positive, every successful economy in the world has conquered the use of fluorine. We know that fluorine goes into our toothpaste, our fluorine goes into our cosmetics, fluorine goes into our refrigeration, fluorine goes into touchscreen, fluorine goes into industry. If you think of an industry, you will find fluorine. So we think our beneficiation of the fluorine through healthcare can enrich the healthcare economy. Not only do we think so, we know that to stop the beneficiation will affect all industries into the final solution. So it's a very important and appreciated avenue for us. In terms of radiation plant and application cluster, we are maintaining full operation of the Safari reactor. It's turning 50 next year. We will celebrate the use of the Safari reactor next year. And it's 50, but it's the most utilized reactor of this type in the world. We produce products that are in excess in terms of revenue of 1 billion. So it's a very important aspect, it's a very important working production unit for us. We continue to expand the applications that we can put this 7-in-1 reactor to. We're working on a new replacement of the Safari reactor. As it ages, we need to make sure that we don't lose the facility that is for us. And NETA is a host of new programs cluster. We intend to increase NETA's research development and innovation output. Here I'm talking plan because we continue to plan, but we are every year increasing the output. And of course we need to do this in an environment of safety, in an environment where young people that work are not healthy. And hence we have a very strong share to achieve a reduced by the sustainable salary bill within the existing funding constraints, forever trying to find newer areas where we can make money. Maintaining infrastructure at a suitable level, we are forever requesting national treasury to assist us in terms of the infrastructure rejuvenation on the next slide. The next slide is a big site, depth of about 16 square kilometers in surface area, and it's got more than 120 buildings on it, so there's a lot of maintenance. The key objectives of the next group, now I'm not talking just next corporate, I'm talking NETA Group, which is NETA and its subsidiary. There is a recognition by the new energy policy that we need to stimulate public awareness, inform the public about this. Every minister that I've worked with in the DOE and EME always enjoying that to demystify this, and I think it's a very important thing for us. We are focusing on marketing of new products and services to local and international markets. And of course, each time I talk about this subject, people say we didn't know that NETA produces such life-saving medication. We work with the Kyoto Memorial Hospital and other hospitals like Kagabet Hospital here to make sure that our products and services not only bring money, but they bring us to each other. We promote technology and the NETA brand to the public. We could be doing more. I've been doing this through our research center, and it's becoming more and more a place to come when it comes to school holiday. Promotion of fluorochemical products, an increased number of new drugs are being developed using fluorochemicals, which is cancer, HIV, malaria, and TB, of course. And they have fluorine in their makeup. Of course, I told you about this Caterpillar company. I think it's a very important success story. I'm going to move on and say, well, what are we doing with our FCF project, the K-Campion project? We were given some money, about 23 million, to develop a dreamland facility to undertake our research. One of the research we want to continue to undertake is to start imaging fossils as they're sitting on the rock face, so that we do not destroy them as we chip away at the rock. The security upgrade project is seeing a lot of success. We utilize all the money that we've gotten for the testing project, and we are very proud of this achievement. For the 2015-2020 project period, NASA was given some money by National Treasury and the Department of Energy to undertake projects around the nuclear effluent management system, which is an arterial system for handling effluent on the reservoir. And of course, to improve and to rejuvenate our land and the digital calibration lab. I'm going to spend half a minute on the calibration lab. What do we need to do? To measure radiation in the mine, to measure radiation coming out of granite, etc., to neutralize the TLD. These TLDs are going to be continually calibrated. You can't calibrate them everywhere in the country. So let us keep that capability on the network. And of course, we do fuel and calibrate manifestos within the network site. And in doing so, we have to make sure that we upgrade our capability. And of course, we are upgrading the site security. And of course, we're working on the site infrastructure upgrade. In terms of key projects, I've mentioned this one, the neutron research facility development. This is the Greenland upgrade I spoke about two slides ago. And the security upgrade project is assessing. It's also allowing for access to be driven to biometrics, etc. And that's why it's a secured and allocation of some money from National Treasury, about 190 million rand, to carry out all these projects that are supported. In terms of the work to develop the outline business case, here we've chosen an approach which is not unique really. We're using the principal approach to document a plan for our project. And it becomes very, very important to know where we are and be able to support the project. In terms of the next budget, I'll ask the PFO to speak about budget. But of course, that first slide tells you about the trajectory of the grant in business.
Thank you. Starting with the grant, as well as this, I'm referring to the topic of the grant. And you can see the grant starting from 114 million to 5,000,000 to 6,000,000. It's a spike in 2014-15, that's the one part of 157 that Joe is here for the bed shoot. And you can move on so we can see the impact of here the graph checks better than the words. We are looking at the grant, the baseline being 2011-2012, where the grant was 514 million. If we were to apply inflation and adjust it with inflation on the base of 2012, the red line would show where the grant would have been if it was potentially accepted. However, the reality is that blue line is where the grant is. What it means in these terms is that the grant is decreasing in real terms. That means we need to be searching more for safe elsewhere to supplement the grant distribution. This is the statement of financial position, commonly referred to as the balance sheet previously. You get the non-current assets and the fixed assets starting in 2013-14 is of this time again 1.2 billion and in 2017-18 1.9. So what we intend in investing in terms of the fixed assets. We cannot generate any revenue without the investment, of course. This is the PO referred to the maintenance of the facilities such that we can be at an acceptable level so that we can continue to support and maintain our current customers as well as provide for growth for the. This is the element of progress with income, as I said, with income statement, where which shows the regular way our income comes from. Satellite being general goods and services is our revenue, and the business is roughly 3% local sales, 7% foreign sales. And all the fact that we generate groceries and food, which means government grants have referred to that at the line, a government grant corporate at group level, basically, it's at 25%, 21%, 14, 15, but that is at group level. Obviously, at NECA corporate, it will be higher, 50%, because NECA corporate is more than maybe at group level, 25%, or in 21% of the nation, as last year, the MGF continues. The other grants is where we go out consciously and raise funding from other partners who are interested in what we do. So this is an area that we are exploring and we still need to see how we can generate other grants in terms of people that are entities or organizations that are interested in what we do. So the gifts are from in the 13, 14, 1.8 billion total income, 17, 18, up going up to 2.9, that's what is what we are expecting. The pressure will increase accordingly, of course, noting that we are in a very technical environment, therefore scientists, engineers, those type of people can generate the kind of energy. So the expenditure will also be increased, including mainly the maintenance of the infrastructure, which is critical. That is, in graph terms, what the income is showing. Income categories, the 32, the blue line is the sale of goods and services, as I said in the previous slide, and I don't know, the color is brownish, whatever, it's double glass. And then the rest of the other income categories and financial services. These are the expenses. The blue line is showing the personnel expenses are percentage, to say the middle of the organization is such that you need very high level chief scientists, engineers, etc. to generate the business council. Though once it is managed to adequately, it will always be a little bit relatively high. If you look at other expenses, the general expenses, the cost of sales, they're all basically at the average level. But the point is, in terms of our operating objectives as well, is just to try and manage our costs and our expenses accordingly, which way we should come to declaring war on risk, not risk as we say, but this is risk for the risk. We never had any risk that has been a risk issue of organizations. So that's all our total expenses. This is the NECA in terms of the corporate, and I don't think in the interest of time I'm going to go deep into it because I've highlighted at the group level. So this is just the corporate picture. These are the subsidiaries showing their sales and income. In terms of the subsidiaries, it's more of a reflection of the area group picture, but that's just indication what the subsidiaries are generating. From the total income, 921, 1014, going all the way to 1.2 billion. It's a figure that we continuously work on so that we can improve the very line and reduce the expenditure that is for us to be facilitated financially. This is the capital expenditure, very critical if you want to generate revenue and sustainable invest, and that is the indicator of how we are investing. At the top, which is the highest is at the top, being next to corporate 1.7 million in today's 14.15, going more up to 50. Notice that going lower as we go towards the years, but these are items of expenditure that continuously need to distribute, such that you make sure that you do not short-change the investment in capital expenditure, do not short-change yourself in assets to produce, especially when it's related to assets, so that you continue to sustain. The NTP rate of the troops is 33 million up to 55%, the highest, the other In total, capital expense 193 in 2015, 17, 18 is lower at 99. As I say, if we are not sustainable, we need to be relooking at the particular expenditure, so that they can always maintain our capital expense, which is too much.
Thank you. Chair, as honourable members, here, the next two slides are talking about our key performance indicators. In terms of 2015 is the current year, so it's a projection. And of course, in terms of the other years, it becomes more and more of a projection. And if you look at our financials,
Yeah, I just put a hand up there. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I address myself to the Honourable Member of the House of Class and the Deputy Minister and the General, Hackney, and all my colleagues and ladies and gentlemen. Let me say at the outset that we're very pleased to have this opportunity to introduce to the Committee the work of the National Nuclear Regulator. Ordinarily, the presentations today would have certainly the opening, the introduction which I'm giving would have been given by our chairperson and perhaps vice chairperson, but unfortunately they've been detained up north and they send their sincere apologies for detaining. So you see before you four of us. Myself, my name is Jeff Heaver. I'm a director on the board of directors of the NNR. And on my far left, Mr. Mimi, also a director. On my right is our Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Tuhika, and on my immediate left is Ryan Phillips, Mr. Ryan Phillips, who runs a senior executive in the organisation, and he's responsible for running the Safety and Reliability Assessment Department, which is the main part of the organisation which carried out technical assessments, which I'll say something about in a moment. But I can begin, and my presentation won't take too long, and then I'll hand over to the CEO. But I can perhaps just begin by outlining my history. I won't go into detail with every particular bullet point on that slide, but we had our beginnings in 1948 and really started off in the same way that many eventual nuclear regulators started off in other parts of the world, namely by being born in the National Research Organization. The regulatory part developed as a result of that's where the experience was, and we have eventually, over the years, achieved full independence, both geographically and politically, from the research organizations. And we are an independent organization today, reporting, as you know, through to the Minister of Energy. We have a very clear framework, legally speaking, through which we operate, and I'll say a bit more about this in a moment, but suffice at this juncture to say that we are bound, and we get our mandate from, the National Nuclear Regulator Act of 1999. And that is quite a nice piece of legislation. I used to say to my staff, it really is your Bible. You must have a copy on your desk because at all times you need to refer to it because it actually spells out pretty clearly what your job as a nuclear regulator is. It establishes a regulator and lays down certain functions. The mandate is pretty clear, and I won't go through all of these, but I'd like to draw your attention to number one, which is providing for the protection of persons, property in the environment, but never just to have the environment, but in recent years includes the environment now, against nuclear damage through the establishment of safety standards and regulated practices. Now, nuclear damage is essentially damage from ionizing radiation, from the radioactive properties of nuclear materials. And the way in which we do this, if we can pass on to the next slide, is through the granting or amending of nuclear organizations. And the way this works is that an entity that wishes to engage in nuclear actions approaches the organization and after discussion is determined whether an authorization is needed or not. Usually an authorization will be needed because the limits of exclusion from our regulatory boundaries are very low. So on the assumption that an authorization is needed, then that organization will have to supply to the regulator details and full information regarding the activities which are intended to be carried out. Those details and information are then very carefully allies to ensure that they comply with the standards that we have laid down. And those standards, they include both good standards and more deterministic radiation hazard standards. There can be, in this process, quite a lot of time taken, because if the applicant does not have the appropriate infrastructure himself to do the necessary evaluations, then the analysis work which the regulator has to do can be more extensive. But at no point do we do the work for the applicant, because we regard ourselves, if I can put this as the background, the front line is the applicant. He is entirely and absolutely responsible for any nuclear damage that may eventually appear. And in fact, the legislation goes further in requiring financial security, which is basically a provision of compensation, to be made available to people who may prove later in life that they have suffered nuclear damage. So it's a very comprehensive act in that regard. If we could just move on then quickly to the governance aspect of the board. The board has 10 members and 2 alternates. In the provision of the legislation, there is a prescription for 1 representative from organised labour, and that is in fact Mr. Mimier, 1 representative of organised business, and 1 person representing communities who may be affected by nuclear activities to sit on the board, together with 1 official from the Department of Energy, an official from Environment, Affairs and Tourism, and no more than 7 other directors in fact. And then of course there's the CEO. And all those are appointed by the Minister, who also appoints the Chairman and Vice-Chairman from those directors. I should point out that there is no provision, in fact it's forbidden, to have on the board representation from an authorisation holder. So the board remains entirely independent in that regard. As the slide points out, there are 3 committees at the moment which work for the board, and they are largely comprised of board members, but other people are invited to sit on those boards, on those committees, where their physical expertise is required. In fact, the Act does not exclude authorisation holders, representatives coming and sitting on those committees, but they would have to be specifically invited to do so. I think that's all I want to say at this stage, so I hand over to the speaker.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lieber, and thank you, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Deputy Director General, for the opportunity to convey the good story that Mr. Lieber has just talked about. It is important, perhaps, to highlight for the committee that Mr. Lieber has worked for the National Nuclear Regulator since 8 years, many years ago. So he's worked in the nuclear industry for 40 years. So the articulation of the Act, as you have, is actually something that he has actually worked on hands-on for many years. So we have very good skills on the boards of the National Nuclear Regulator. Just to reinforce on the government's again, we report to the Minister of Energy, and of course eventually to Parliament and Cabinet, and the Board of Directors who actually promoted the strategy and exercise decision-making powers as well as general legislators, and the board committee, as you saw earlier, and the CEO and EXCO, which actually execute the strategic plan of the organization, and our management also specific committees that look at different areas of the business of the regulator, amongst which you have the lead committees for supply chain management oversight. You have ICT, of course, you need to have that infrastructure in the house to make sure that things run seamlessly. Training committee for human resources development. The risk management committee has the governance requirements, as well as project steering committee. You would at this point realize that media business, Chairperson, is for the most part driven by a number of projects, and therefore you need to house these committees under an umbrella of a committee that provides an oversight. It will probably be important for us to inform the committee who do we ever authorize, who do we license. Before us, Mr. Salani was here speaking for NEXA, he is one of our esteemed licensees because we derive a lot of fees from him. So he falls under the category of nuclear technology and waste products. That would be NECA, so we license NECA. We also license the Kuga Power Station that one of the members alluded to earlier, which is now, as the Babo mentioned earlier also, almost 1 year. Okay. We also authorize naturally occurring radioactive materials in the form of mostly mining and mineral processing facility. All our members would perhaps know that in the process of mining, especially gold, such a byproduct of the gold that is mined, especially highly radioactive in the form, well, very highly, but also radioactive in the form of some of the tailings, some of the hazardous materials that come from the process. So we have to authorize those. We also authorize scrap nurses and scrap users, more users in terms of dealerships of scrap materials. Because we had a lot of cases where radioactive material was detected in scrap yards. So we have to make sure that all those scrap dealerships are authorized and are operating legal so that they can report if there's any such contaminated material to the National Nuclear. Switching gears to strategic overview, we have a vision that we think we are trying very much to live up to, which is to be an independent world-class regulatory authority on nuclear safety in South Africa. And also, our mission is to provide and maintain an effective and efficient national regulatory framework for the protection of persons, property, and environment against nuclear damage, as Mr. Lieber has so eloquently articulated. We espouse a number of values. Like any other organization of highly skilled workforce, we have to hold ourselves accountable to the highest standards of professionalism in everything we do. We have to demonstrate integrity and ethical conduct in all that we do and strive for excellence, as well as demonstrate that we value our people. Mr. Talani has said quite clearly that these people are very high skilled and very difficult to keep, and therefore grading them becomes one of the core responsibilities of the employer. We demonstrate teamwork because, as you can imagine, looking after an installation such as Kuberg of that magnitude, you need to do it as a team, you don't just assign one person. So there's a plethora of different professional expertise that you need to employ in looking after just one installation, and therefore teamwork becomes very core in making sure that the work is well executed. And like any other regulatory body, and NERSA will attest to this later when we present, that you have to be open and transparent to your customers. And more so for nuclear regulators, we have to demonstrate to the public, to our stakeholders, that we are open and transparent in all interactions that we do. I will quickly browse through our strategic goals, which is to provide an effective regulatory oversight and framework for your nuclear safety and security. Perhaps it is important to note here, Chairperson, that the act that Mr. Lieber has just talked about has for many years talked only of nuclear safety. But since the event that happened in the United States on the 11th of September 2001, regulators around the world actually came to the realization that the nuclear terrorism has become a very, very, very real possibility. And therefore, we have to provide not only for nuclear safety, but also for nuclear security. Now, our act is undergoing an overhaul to include and make sure that we cater for such things as nuclear security. Of course, we are in the process still regulating for nuclear security, although it is not fully enacted. But we are hoping that after the act has been amended, we'll do a better job in that. We have a goal to strengthen our stakeholder relations and enhance public image and create high performance culture. Like any other state entity, we derive our income from taxpayers, and we have to demonstrate value for that income that we get, that allocation that we get. This goes for ensuring financial viability and sustainability of the organization, And for us to be effective, we have to develop and maintain sound foundation infrastructure, good governance, prerequisite, of course, for any entity, and ensure effective human capital management. And that goes for retention of these high skilled as well. Now, specific objectives, I'm not going to read everything, but for us to be an effective regulatory oversight program, provide that regulatory oversight and framework for regulatory testing, we have process on cases from our organization in a timely and fashion, because we charge fees for this authorization, so we have to give as much as we get from our headquarters. Not to assure that holders with emergency and effective emergency plan in place. We are part of what Mr. Mbambo presented, that framework that has to assure that in case something goes wrong with Quebec, we must make sure that the property, the environment, and people of this country are protected against any possibility of human damage. The regulator is currently undergoing an overhaul of its strategic plan. And so we have decided to relook on our strategic goals and try to translate them in such a way that we will be able to aspire to get to that vision of us of becoming a world class regulator. So we have fixed quite a number of things which will be discussed by the board tomorrow and Thursday. And among those, we have changed things such as creating a high government culture today. We want to establish and maintain a high performance culture of effective performance systems and people management. Because you cannot just set a goal of having a high performance culture when you don't have systems in place that will measure that effectively. So that's one. That's some of our concentration in the coming cycle. Good governance, I've talked about that. Effective human capital management. We want to ensure that instead of only looking at effective human capital management, we want to embrace the entire cycle of talent management. We make sure that we attract the right skills, we train them accordingly, and we retain them within the system by making sure that they get excited for work to do and they are remunerated accordingly. Priority projects and initiatives, we have quite a few of those. I'm not going to talk about everything in the interest of time, but I'll pick up on the first one, which may be of interest to the committee, that we are looking at assessing a safety case from Eskom as far as the plating the steam generator for the Cooper Winter Power Plant is concerned. And the Cooper Winter Power Plant has been running at 1 year earlier, and the time has come for the placement of the steam generator, and that is a process that needs a regulatory oversight because it's nuclear in nature, so it needs to be that part of the power plant that is on the primary surface. But it definitely needs that oversight, the licensing process. It's a huge project, so we have to gear ourselves towards that as far as preparing the adequate skills in house and make sure that we are going to provide timely feedback to Eskom to make sure that they head into the process and the project on time. We also are going to be participating in government structures and international forums in preparation for the nuclear new group. As you would all know, this country has not used nuclear power plants for many years, and therefore licensing nuclear power plants would meet a lot of comparing bonds between nuclear regulatory bodies. And we are in that regard and talking to a number of our bilateral partners. The National Nuclear Regulator has signed bilateral agreements and has been working well with the United States, France, the Republic of Korea, the Russian Federation, and we are now in talks to, of Canada, of course. We are now in talks to sign bilateral agreements with the People's Republic of China, as well as Finland. We, of course, in the process of preparing for nuclear builds, we are gearing ourselves towards approaching governments to get the necessary resources to be able to increase our capacity in the house for nuclear, to be able to license the nuclear expansion. The last one I want to talk about is the one, number 9, which is the establishment of the Nuclear Radiation Safety Center of Excellence, which we think it's an important initiative from our side because it talks to the developments, the homegrown skills in this area. We recognize the fact that for this country to be able to carry out the nuclear program of the magnitude that the President talked about, 9.6 gigawatts, then we have to prepare accordingly. Not only must other entities such as NEXA and ESCOM prepare, but we as the regulator have to prepare and be able to run miles ahead of the tech so that we can be able to license these funds on time and make sure that they are designed, constructed, and operated safely. Other assumed development in tech one has, as I said, any engagement with ESCOM or whoever the operators will be for the new nuclear field. This means that even before an application comes to the NNR, we have to be to start planning around that, and that needs resources. So we need to talk to that potential operator or potential licensee of the new fund to make sure that those resources are in place. Mr. Talani has spoken about Safari through the enter, the market efforts to enter next planning. That cannot happen if the regulator is not licensed. So we have to start talking to them, preparatory and exploratory discussion with NECA for licensing on the Safari 2. Earlier on, we've heard from the acting director general that there is a new national radioactive waste disposal institute that again cannot operate if we do not license it. So we need again to start engaging with them to discuss on how they will be transferring their licenses from NECA themselves, in other words, relicensing their facilities. We are also talking about preparing ourselves for integrated regulatory review mission from the IAEA, which will look at our capacity and readiness for nuclear builds as a regulator, not as a country now, but as a particular entity, which is a regulator. And that is planned for December of 2016. Financial information, it's not very clear from the screen there, but members have copies there, but what is most important to note is that we drive our revenue stream from 2000, namely government, the government grants, and the fee that we charge the people who hold our license, population fees. And from the chart, you can see here that the grant received from government is 3.6 million for the past year. And what we expect to get from the authorizing holders is 170 million. And you can see how that money is actually extended. Overall, we are projecting an average growth of 9% on total revenue over the MCAP period from 149 million to 176 in the next financial year. And we have already started talking to ESCOM to build them the steam generator project, and as I said, part of our revenue comes from the services that we render from licensees. Notably, I have omitted the charts, but if you have charts in your printout, but the summary of those charts is basically to say that our non-current assets have increased by 7%, 1.8 million, mainly because of acquisition of an equipment radioactive analysis laboratory during the year. Our cash and cash equivalents have increased by 2%, 24 million, and this can be attributable to special capex of 31 million that we received, and invoices issued at the last quarter of the year due to late approval of authorization fees. Members must note that the process of how we charge our authorization holders, our license holders, it's a long-winded process that starts from us that goes to the Department of Energy, that goes to the Treasury for approval, and that can do a long back and forth on how much the Treasury agrees to grant to us as the reasonable increase of authorization fees. And that has taken long this time around, and we have to collect some of the fees made from our license fees. The data assessment. Thank you from Mr. Mieza from NEXA. You can see that we had a spike around 2013-2014 with the capital injection for seven projects, including the laboratory that we are almost completing. But then again, for 2015, the allocation comes down to around 33 million, as I have shown earlier. Capital projects in progress. Laboratory, I mentioned that, for 80 million, almost complete. 12 million for the emergency control center, which is in progress. $17 million for the Vietnam office and the maintenance control center. We are refurbishing our Kingdom office, so expecting expansion of staff in anticipation of these projects that I talked about, including the new generator of Kuba. In conclusion, Chairperson, nuclear safety must be a foremost requisite for any country's nuclear program. Without regard to the effect of nuclear safety, we should not have nuclear expansion in our new nuclear bill. So we have to bear that in mind and make sure that it is clearly stated for in all our planning. An independent and effective and efficient nuclear regulatory body must provide regular oversight to that program. And the LNR has engaged in preparations for new rules, while also maintaining a clean record on the current operating nuclear power plant and other facilities. We take our mandate to protect the African public property and environment against harmful effects of radiation with utmost seriousness. Any nuclear project, including the possible nuclear build proposal, will be subjected to rigorous safety assessment and regulatory oversight consistent with our legislation that Mr. Lever talked about, our regulations that we have developed and the minister has promulgated. And most importantly, we will be subjected to the principles of international testing. I have mentioned that we have international bilateral partners that are very, very important in helping us and in helping us build our own skills and expertise so that we make sure that what our projects that come our way is properly assessed, safety assessed, and licensed accordingly. I thank you.
Before you go, I've been helping you that one to understand what involves the
I think before we go through the details of the most important part of the Before we get up into a presentation, I just want to manage expectations, Chairman. We try to follow the brief to the letter. So you'll see that in our presentation, we actually make only an overview of NEPA, the first thing. But we only deal also with the strategic plan. So we don't go into any detail on some of the industries that we regulate and those sort of methods. So you won't get discussions about the capacity and the story capacity and the podium and those sort of stuff. I think it that is required that we have to come and discuss it at another stage. But also, I think during in the morning there were suggestions that we may cover issues like tariffs, municipalities and that. And I have to say that not in a detailed presentation. Again, it's quite similar, you know, as your indication, we have to come back or even take questions later on. So, of course, let me just say that to manage expectations. But our presentation is actually very, very brief. Now, on the slide, let me start with the introductory slide. I'm going to cover, AD&C, which is the overview of NASA institutional structure, vision, mission, mandate, and regulatory principles. And as I said, very brief. And then the CEO will deal with the strategic plan, annual performance plan, budget, and the rest of that. Now, NASA is an institute, an entity created by statute. So we created by legislation. We are independent regulator. However, currently we report to the Minister of Energy. We also funded purely from ladies from industry. So we don't get a spent allocation from the discount and that sort of thing. But we also allocate profit making and business. So any excess ladies that we get over our requirements, we give that to the industry, as we will explain later on. We have five part-time regulator and four full-time regulation members. I'll show you who they are later on. And our staff complement is having 77. Now, we were established in 2005. However, the industries that we regulate, have been around a little longer. So we regulated three industries. We regulated electricity industry, pipelines. We also regulate petroleum and pipelines. I think it's important to note though that we don't look after the entire value chain in the industry. So we don't look at, for instance, exploration and that sort of thing and production of gas. So we look at storage and pipelines and that. So, that's the extent of our regulation. But like all regulators, we try and balance conflicting interests of the assets. And institutional structure, as I indicated earlier, there's four groups of regulation members. They hold office for 5 years, and I'll tell you who they are. You see at the bottom there, there's a CEO to one of the groups of regulatory members. But we also have three members, each responsible for each industry. So one is responsible for electricity, one is responsible for pipeline, and another one is responsible for petroleum and pipeline. So these are the three full-term regulators. And then the five part-term regulators include both myself as the chairperson and our deputy chairperson. Now, so there is the table. Data point on both of them. The CEO kindly is here. You see even on the registry board, the gender balance is also pretty good. So, now Mr. Bukla is a full-time regulatory member responsible for electricity. And Dr. Copton is a full-time regulatory member responsible for a pipeline. And Ms. Mercedes is responsible for pipeline. So for two long pipelines and pipelines. and then the rest are our Ajahn Brigade members. And then briefly on our mission and vision. So we strive to be a world class leader in energy regulation. So we benchmark ourselves against some of our global peers. And you know, but however we do take into account local peculiarities, local pressures and industry development. However, in our regulations, we don't operate in a vacuum. So we regulate in line with government policies, government laws, and not say that we're independent. However, in all that we do, and you'll see when the CEO does a presentation, that we get most of our mandate from established laws and government policies and that. Now, on Monday, each element of the act that we regulate, like the Electricity Act, the CAPGAS Act, and the Permanent Pipeline, they have their own detailed mandate. However, what we try to do is summarize them on the slide here. To see that we issue licenses, we set and approve tariffs, we monitor and enforce compliance with license conditions, we get engaged in dispute resolution, we gather information and disseminate industry information. We set rules, guidelines, codes of regulations of all the three industries. We determine conditions of supply, and we also do registration of important production facilities. And like all regulators, I think it's important that we also adhere to certain regulatory principles. And these are summarized on the slide here. I think key is transparency. I think you'll see in all our activities that we operate in a very public manner. So all records of decisions are done in public. We conduct public hearings on a regular basis before we set tariffs, before we issue licenses and that. So we are extremely transparent, and I think we find it important in our activities. We try to be neutral. And what that means is that we don't favor one group over the other. So there's often a misunderstanding that we look after just the interests of customers and that's not the case. But what we do here is we also understand that in one of our roles to ensure orderly development of the industry, the industry that we regulate, but we also have a public interest objective. So we are very neutral in the manner in which we take decisions and we behave. We also try to be consistent and predictable. This is key because it creates regulatory certainty. It allows for ease of investment and so forth. So if industry wants to come and make investments, they'd like to know that in what we do is predictable. As I said, we're independent, but independent, even though we get funding from our licensees, we still find that the independence is strong to those licensees. And this aspect is important. And even though we report to the Ministry of Energy, we try and ensure that we create the right balance and we avoid regulatory capture by any customer. So that's key for us. So we are accountable, we have integrity, so we're honest, objective in the way we deal with customers. And I think efficiency is also important in the work that we do. On average, it takes us about 90 days to make decisions on license applications and infrastructure designation. So that's our way of background.
Thank you very much for being here with us again and through this presentation and presentation to the committee sometime. Just by way of insight as well, just to say that you have a deck of maps that's been attached to many. The one on top is what we're going to do, which is highlight as a reference. But the second part behind the green divide in the text has got the full level of information. It's a much more write-up. that the members can then refer to at the end of the opportunity of the commercial and go for all of that at this registration. Our strategic outcome oriented goals of NASA are created from the mandate and they reflect key policy priorities from government and these key policy priorities amongst others the national outcome, the national development plan, the national growth path, the national infrastructure plan from which the SIPs are derived, as well as the IFS. These are the core NASA's role in facilitating achievement of the national socioeconomic and social political development agenda. So our outcomes are as follows. The third one is to facilitate the inclusion of that in order to support sustainable socioeconomic development in the country. The department earlier that you referred to the department managing around the social supply within our limits as a regulator, we also facilitate the social supply in the country. Secondly, we facilitate investment in and access to infrastructure in the energy industry. All of our goals are as yet by the achieving social community development in the country. Number three is to promote competitive and efficient functioning as well as orderly development of the energy industry in the country. The DG area has also said to the promotion of competition in some of the energy sectors that the department provides today. Number four, to facilitate affordability of and accessibility to the energy balance. And to find the economic interest of all stakeholders in support of social economic development of the sector and for the federal level on and the action in terms of the coverage, position and established NASA as credible and the level regulator. In order to change regulatory certainties, that's very important for purposes of investment, and all of that was referred to earlier in the morning. Our strategic objective to promote energy supply that is certain and secure for current and future user needs, that point later on will go into the challenge. Secondly, to create a regulated environment that facilitates investment in energy infrastructure, to promote competition and competitiveness within the energy industry, to promote regulatory certainty within the energy industry, promote accessible and affordable energy for all citizens and to establish a position network as a credible and reliable regulator. Our program through which we want to achieve these objectives and those goals that we stated earlier. The effort, one, to make decisions and four, approval first and five. And under this program, that's where we deal with the municipal tariff applications, the methodology we utilize to determine those, the tariff for ESCOM, and the methodology we utilize to determine those, all of that is part under this program of offsetting and or approving tariffs and tariffs and prices. And other X is called taxes and other X is called tariffs, and that's what we try to accommodate there. We also have the license and residence, license operation, the residence production operation. We are responsible for compliance management and we're enforcement of compliance. We do a dispute resolution, including mediation, attrition, and the handling of complaints. Five, we set rules, guidelines, and codes for the regulation of trade industries. And lastly, establishing NASA as a beacon and an effective regulator. Now, all the three industries, what we can do in the next 3 slides is just to show that our programs are matched against our strategic objectives, and that is the one at the top to demonstrate the point that I made from this slide. But the objective is promotion of energy supply at the session and secure for current and social user needs. There are 3 programs of the 6 programs, 3 of them respond to this objective, and that's the set of tariffs and prices, licensing and registration, as well as comparable machines. That's what I will do in the next 3 slides, and I will talk more through those, and we'll go into all the details. We then shift and look at the annual performance plan from 2015 to 2017, as 5 years requirement. If I use the electricity industry as an example, so what I show is a pie chart that highlights at a high level how many programs we've got, how many KPIs we've got in each of the programs. All in green, on the third color, shown compliance and monitoring. Blue one is licensing, equal to compliance, and there are different pieces of others. Now, just if I ask you to turn to slide 25 after the green sheet on your handout, and now that is the case of electricity as an example. What we have on slide 25 is the beginning of the KPI for the program 1 in relation to electricity. And you see the program 1, program 2, and 5, and 6, and it keeps going all the way up to program 6. And that we have signed relations to every industry and will recognize that I'm not going to for purpose of this presentation. Did I move too fast for the rest? If I just go over that again, on the handout that we've got, there's a blue divided page, that's what we're looking for now. After that, if you look at slide 25, it shows the details of program 1 in relation to the toxic industry. The next slide shows the toxicism. The next slide would go program 2, program 3, program 4. Each industry has got activities of KPI by program. And we go through them. So for the rest of this presentation, I am just at a high level of reflection of what how those KPIs are split amongst the various industries. So this is part that again you see a bigger component of our time, goes to our complaint monitoring and then licensing. Petroleum pipelines, we've also got a similar thing where we've got a high element of compliance monitoring. Now that's our way of observation. As an organization, we have been regulating now electricity for 9 years, pipelines and petroleum pipeline for 9 years. So we moved from a phase of establishment and we started moving towards more and problems and therefore we see our own activities adhere towards the type of activity of focus. We have what we call what's happening, which are better regulation issues, like we deal with the energy within the organization. And in that phase, all of our KPIs are geared to program 5 and program 6, which is establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator. And we've got the organizational and corporate dimensions, which also look at program 6 of establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator. There are 6 KPIs in that particular area, and the details are contained in the detailed slides as well. So the findings. That important principle of contained in our act is that the three industries have to be different from each other and that not one industry must subsidize another. So all costs, all direct costs that are attributable to each industry, we do so. However, we have a big percentage of what we call common costs. And in order to see how we deal with the common costs, we've got what we call a mechanism of energy, which says that of the common cost, 58% will go to electricity, 21% to petroleum pipeline, and 81% to transport. The basis for those percentages are the level of other systems that are within or budget or the human resource allocation, and you can get any of those aspects, and you get pretty much to this particular allocation for funds. With that in mind, we can show how our budget is funded. And spend. So if you look at the middle column there, our income, which is from levies that we levy on the industry, with the two rights, we show the actual value. And the total for the year 2014-15 is 324 million. That category other in the middle there is a provision where we deal with over the number. Because when we impact the financial year, we look at projected volume. And then at the end of the financial year, we've got audited actual volume. It's inevitable that we always have a mismatch between the two numbers, and in order to true up, we will then have that particular figure. And what we do with that number is that we refund it to industry. So we can never take more than what you need from industry, and we refund industry by offsetting against the tariff for the subsequent year. We have a little from January to roll this amount over, because literally we can't be taking money back to industry and asking them to have money back. So to be able to keep it in the budget and to roll it over the year, we've got several commission to do that, so the public will not be able to pay for it. In relation to the budget, again, in the slides, in the backup slides that I give you that I've handed over, we do show our budget cut in terms of our program. So from program 1 to program 6, we can show how much it costs as an organization in that industry. One of the areas we requested to assess was the assets we own as an organization, and that asset we have with our head office that we operate from, and we have the housing project. We own the building from about 30 years ago, 2001, and we actually delivered it at the end of March 2014, and it's worth 43 million. This includes the value of the land at 9.2 million. We are looking at the reception of the building and the reception of some of the issues of the environment issues. performance against objectives and the human rights transition. We just think that over the last 2 years, our performance has moved from 87% to 97%. But then within the success is the women who come in from the annual approach in the case of committee that were done in the women and each one not, and also just has been done. In conclusion, firstly, congratulate members of the portfolio committee on their appointment to their position, and again, to the portfolio committee for the opportunity to introduce ourselves and make the presentation. As an organization, we are looking at an ongoing process of defining our process of regulation, and we are conscious of the regulatory burdens that we impose on businesses through our regulatory activities, and we only wish to minimize these. We are relentlessly striving for regulatory certainty in order to ensure that we contribute to an environment that is conducive for our taxes and ensuring quality investment, because it is clear that the order of all the investment that we need to happen in energy, it can all be funded on the back of government money. And lastly, we do indicate the fact that there are some legislative gaps in the laws that we utilize. However, these were the very set of laws that were issued by government when they set up the regulator. And out of experience, we have now realized that there can be some improvement brought onto this act. And we will highlight over an ongoing basis with the department. And I have to say here that the department has been aligned to our proposals and in the amendment bill that has still come out of the department. The department does indeed respond to some of the issues that were raised in the legislature. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
In particular, when I talk to the principles around green industrialization,
And it's also a question that was raised from one of the members earlier this morning about what it's going to take for us to actually establish a green industry in this country in support of the green economy. I'm going to talk to one or two of those areas. I would like to touch on projects such as carbon capture and storage, which was also raised this morning. I think it's a critical program if we're going to continue using fossil fuels, specifically coal, and I'll just talk to you about some of the broad principles around that. And then very briefly, just to talk through the budgeting issues as well, which is a requirement for this presentation. One of the most important slides really relates to what we call our strategic pillars, or strategic outcomes, as National Treasury would like us to call them. And really we have three, and we'll show it in a bit more detail later how important these three are. But they really talk to two things. One of them is to make sure that we have a well-informed government that can make an important decision on policy and legislation. To do that, they need access to data, any information, any tools, and part of our responsibility is to ensure that those tools exist. The second goal is to equip governments being able to make a transformation to a less carbon-intensive economy and create jobs in the process of doing that. The last goal would be to foster this culture of a more rational use of our energy and natural resources that includes water as well as energy. To get there, we are certain enablers. We need to develop the right skills and talent management. We need to make sure that we have the data and the institutional memory that's enough in securing our knowledge management components. And the last one is to make sure that we have stakeholders that are involved either in government or in the private sector that contribute towards reaching those goals. So we're a catalyst at the end of the day for growth in the country, and we're a catalyst for ensuring that energy solutions are brought to the table and diversify our energy economy. Taking a step further, we have a broader focal point, if you like, which is made up of various key strategies and policies that are introduced by our government and will continue to be introduced by our government. And that acts as our guide in terms of helping us to determine what those priorities are and how we'll go about achieving it. So for the three goals that I've stated to you before, they take the cue from certain key strategies and policies, for instance, IRP 2012, which was raised this morning by the department. The next IRP, of course, being 2014. There are some ministerial determinations that have been made around IRP 2012 already. There's also, of course, the IEP. The IEP now, of course, will go back to Cabinet once the comments phase is closed, which is roughly now. What you can't really see is the grey outline, just a little bit like Table Mountain. And what that grey area shows, that shaded area shows, is our velocity with respect to emission reduction in the country. How we intend reducing our CO2 emissions down to about 400 million tons of CO2 per annum, or 450. What we're trying to establish is a method of keeping the economy growing at the same time to reduce the energy intensity and thereby our emissions. So by 2025, we anticipate that the country will stabilize in terms of our emission profile, and then by 2025, we actually decrease our emissions. And our goal is to make sure that we get there and introduce the right technologies, and I'll show you in a while what those technologies will be. Another important consideration is what happens to technology when we develop them, and very importantly is that the public sector, so our government in particular, spend lots of money in terms of doing basic R&D, which is done through universities and other science councils. Ultimately, we reach a breakthrough point where we have a technology that looks promising. Then we expect the private sector to actually step in and fund it and commercialize it. Unfortunately, many technologies end up in the midpoint, which is what we call this so-called technology barrier test. They die there because they're not picked up by the private sector. And there are examples of that. For instance, our own DDMR technology, which very promising at one stage, has offered the opportunity to introduce modular technology in terms of nuclear energy, and unfortunately that's been largely discarded. The JUUL is a very promising opportunity for us to establish our own electric vehicle in the country that died. Unfortunately, we're not able to commercialize it at the time. We've lost an opportunity there to show that South African technology. We run the risk that our own solar technology, which was developed at the University of Johannesburg, will also die because we're not able to commercialize it effectively at the moment. Similarly, with what we call the Stellenbosch Wave Energy Converter, which is a wave power device developed at the University of Stellenbosch, we also run the risk that it's going to die. So this is the space in which we need in place. This is our niche, to make sure that the technologies that are developed in the country reach market penetration, help grow industries in this country. So those three goals that I spoke about earlier have got programs that have been developed that allow us to implement those goals. And those are the programs that you see on the right. And they range from including our advanced fossil fuel area right down to data knowledge management. So a wide variety of areas. The National Energy Act allows us to operate in all sectors of energy except nuclear energy because we have data in place already. So we copy essentially everything else. And then you have the energy efficiency program, which gets to help government through ECOM as well as the department and other state entities to meet their goals in energy efficiency. This is just a bit more detail. I won't go through it for the use of time here, but just to point out there are a number of specific interventions that are specifically in place to help us to reach those goals and those policies on this slide. Very important to be also in the innovation value chain, where the main thing, if you look at active R&D, which is the domain of the Department of Science and Technology, you'll find most of the work is undertaken by universities and science councils. They generate intellectual property. Our goal is to pilot, demonstrate, and produce commercial prototypes, and then hand over almost the finished product to your financiers, that could be the IDP, USA, etc., or the private sector themselves. So that is the opportunity there for the media to participate in. So this is our organizational structure. I think from a gender perspective, it needs a little bit of work. Certainly we have the right chairperson, so thank goodness for that. But I think in reality, there's a lot of work that has to be done. Overall, in terms of the organization, we have 33% women in the organization. I just think at the senior management level, a little bit more work has to be done. Our company secretary will be appointed soon and almost likely to be a female as well, which will help to improve representativity at that level. What we have considered for this presentation is our linkage to the G plan within government, and they include the integrated energy plan, the national development plan that came through during the course of last year, the integrated resource plan, which has gone through revision as well. And so what we find is that there's a consistent metric with respect to the role that renewable energy and energy efficiency plays in these plans. And our goal is to support that through the development of skills, to help reduce emissions by increasing these technologies and making sure we work with entities like National Treasury to introduce a fiscal instrument that are going to allow us to actually fast track the development of those technologies. And later on, I'll talk about energy efficiency, where you'll see an example of that in the case of Section 12I and 12L, the Income Tax Act. Now, this is an important aspect for us. If we are going to emerge as a knowledge-based economy and move away from being a commodity-based one, which is currently very revived, you have to put in place certain key steps. And these are some of the key steps that you have to do. You then have to increase your investment in renewable energy. You have to localize. You have to make sure that you advance certain R&D funding aspects that we actually can produce more and more technology. We need access to those technologies, and very importantly, you need the financial system. I'll get you there. And lastly, and very importantly, is the whole notion of math and science literacy. Most of you will be aware of where South Africa placed in a recent survey around math and science literacy, about 144 countries and 144. And that's a very bad position to be in if you want to establish yourself as a knowledge-based economy. Countries like South Korea and Malaysia have gone through the transition. We are lagging somewhat in that whole space. There are some areas where South Africa can start to make a difference. One of the areas is solar, large-scale solar concentration, solar power technologies. These projects are already under construction in the Northern Cape in particular, and will be in the country. And what they do, they're an application of solar energy where you've got large-scale use, but you also have storage potential, which is fantastic. What's good about the technology also is that it can be manufactured in South Africa. Most of the components can be locally sourced. So we're now working with EDI to actually develop a framework under which we can develop the technology further. Earlier I mentioned to you that we'll be looking at these programs under the various goals. These are programs that we have set up in the Navy, and I've spoken about them before. Some of the key plans and projects that we're involved in include shale gas, and we've spoken also this morning about the importance of shale gas and the whole issue around fracking. We are working together with interdepartmental customers state by DMR. There is more guidance, however, that's required to ensure that we can introduce appropriate R&D into this space. Why? Because we know that there are environmental concerns about the use of a water-based fracking system. There are many cases where a water-less fracking environment is being created to support shale gas exploration and recovery. So for us, there's an opportunity to work with the United States, there's an opportunity to work with the Australian, and we tended to put the discussions on hold and look at time and government informed us as to the type of relationship that we intend having with some of the international partners. Our Working for Energy program as well is one of the key areas where we engage directly with communities and where we are creating jobs on the ground by training people how to use energy more effectively, and I'll give you examples of that in due course. So earlier I showed you the graph, if you like, that outline of where we can reduce emissions. These are some of the areas that we need involved that help us to reduce emissions. Firstly, post combustion capture and storage of carbon dioxide is where after you burn your coal, for instance, in a power station or in a fuel facility like Tesla, you're able to take that carbon dioxide and effectively trap it in storage. Team augmentation, hybridization involves the use of large-scale solar, to complement the use of coal, for instance, in your coal-fired power plants, or even in industry where you have smelters. So you use solar to raise steam, and so and thereby you actually displace the use of coal. Waste energy, and you have lots of waste that you can generate in the country, particularly tires. There's also landfills, there's sewage, there's other forms of invasive vegetation that become a resource as well. Then you have community-driven energization projects such as Working for Energy, our energy efficiency initiative, and green transport space, which is a convergence area between the spark of transport type technology and energy. This is how we do it. We have various centers that have been established. These are listed for your benefit. They are called port centers of research and development, and they act as a chain where we're actually able to link up all the main players in producing the results. And I'd like to give an example in the case of carbon capture and storage. If we are going to continue using fossil fuels into the future, it is almost inevitable that we have to. We have to find a way to transition from the use of coal to more sustainable sources such as nuclear energy and renewable energy. In order to do that, we actually look at clean fossil fuel use, and that includes carbon capture and storage. And how the process works very simply is that if you have a power station that produces carbon dioxide, you may in some cases firstly have to separate out the carbon dioxide from the rest of the flue gas. You then have to transport it from it. We are going to store it. If you're lucky, you have a pipeline. If you're not lucky, you have to use rail, you have to use truck, or both. And then you have to transport that to a site, which is then called a sink, where you have to store that CO2 underground. And I'll show you how far underground you have to go with that. So that, in a nutshell, is the process of carbon capture and storage. And there are many aspects of the capture part. It's expensive. It involves separating out the CO2 from the different gases, transporting it to the appropriate site, and then once you've stored it, and this is an illustration of how far down you go. You look at the power station right on top of the battery. You'll note that we actually have to go down several kilometers to the relevant site, which is based on a particular geological structure. So you can't just store it anywhere. You have to have the right porosity and permeability, and these are two parameters that define how much space that you have in rock, and how quickly the gas moves through the rock, and how well it's captured under cap rock. So you have to have all the parameters in place before you can store CO2. That's the Eiffel Tower at the bottom is also indicative of the gas that you go down to with carbon capture storage. And lastly, you have to monitor and make sure that the gas doesn't move. It actually becomes the same liquid as those gas in England before the reaches a critical point in any case. So here at the International Energy Agency, that determines that carbon capture and storage can help us to reduce by 14% of our emissions by 2015. So it's a very important contributor towards reducing our emissions and our carbon intensity. Also along the way, we note that there are various technologies that contribute to water use reduction. Of course, coal power generation in the Bay Area, that contributes the most. And then, as you'll see by 2050, the non-OECD countries, which include South Africa, are expected to make the most contribution towards reducing our emissions. So it's a very important contributor, if you like, towards reducing emissions globally in South Africa. And this is a roadmap that's been started. We've already done an analysis on our CCS potential in this country, reduce the storage assets, which I'll show you in a second, and now we're getting ready for the hybrid storage phase, which looks at storing up to 10,000 tons of CO2 from a particular source underground over the time frame. So this is the map of South Africa, which includes the potential storage sites that are outlined in the black circles. You can see they are sites onshore as well as offshore, and we're now in the process of verifying which of those sites are the most suitable for our next phase of the project. For the pilot phase, we are looking mainly onshore because of the cost involved in having to go offshore and to drill offshore. So that's the phase that we're in, and very important that we're working together with four key stakeholders, the government, as well as in the private sector, to make sure that the pilot phase happens as soon as possible. The state government has committed funding already. The Department of Energy has already provided about 197 million grants towards the project. The World Bank has now committed $25 million towards the project, and there are various other governments that have come forward to support the initiative. The whole program has been endorsed by Cabinet a week, and is now almost part of our flagship programs under the Climate Change Response Strategy. Moving ahead, there are other key programs, such as the Green Transport Program, which I said to you involves introducing more efficient alternatives to the current public and private transportation needs in the country. That could be LPG, CNG, and hybrids. It could be electric vehicle technology. It could be diesel, electric hybrids, and buses. And more importantly for us right now, it's also by using waste and fuel for public fleets as well. And then also our RECO Center, which is our renewable energy center, works together with the other research bodies in the country to develop best technologies and solutions around renewable energy. We've just produced the wind access for the Africa revised version, and we set up a training facility at CPUT that allowed us to train up on today from disadvantaged communities and be able to maintain and install PV and wind turbine technology. And we're hoping to educate that, particularly in the Salt Lake area in the Northern Cape. We have an opportunity to train youngsters in how to actually install and maintain larger scale solar technology. We're also setting up a test facility at Nelson Mandela Metro University, also allow disadvantaged children and students to be able to help in testing the quality around. On the energy efficiency side, I've mentioned very briefly the Section 12 IA, Section 12 Valid Income Tax Act, but very important for us is the notion that the government has now publicly introduced a benefit to allow industry to introduce energy efficiency and get the tax rebate for it. We've established a hub for energy efficiency at the University of Pretoria, where we have well over 150 graduates in energy efficiency that are now available to be utilized in the market. We're also setting up a new center around this hub, and we'll be able to introduce also a measurement and verification center. Both management and verification practitioners are vital. If we're going to get any benefits, we have to make sure that they are properly, that the results are properly measured and verified, and you need specific skills to do that, and we now have the help to build those skills. Lastly, on the pool roof side, I want to share with you very briefly what pool roofs are or pool surfaces. Essentially, it could be roofs, windows, walls, anything like that. They are coated with a selective coating, which conventionally used to be white paint, but now it can be any color, provided it has the right property. Those properties relate to what we call solar reflectance. In other words, how much light you can reflect off that surface, or thermal emittance, in terms of how long that surface will be. And what you see in the past, where you have a black roof, for instance, the heat in that roof is trapped. You raise the temperature by 80 degrees Celsius, but the white roof where you end up reflecting 80% of the sunlight and temperature of the roof is only about 44 degrees Celsius. So what that means is that you can save in the order on average about 2-4 degrees Celsius in motor heat. You can in fact save up to 20% of the energy bill from air conditioning by just applying your full surface in terms of paint on your roof or your walls. And globally, you can see that there's a massive impact, and this is why it's now part of the Clean Energy Ministerial, which is led by the United States, where this has become one of the teacher programs to help us to reduce our emissions profile. Just working for energy very briefly, it's our program that's designed to create jobs, particularly in rural areas. We do that through a variety of interventions that are intended to actually reduce energy from waste, from water in terms of mini, I'll show you a second, our mini hydro scheme, and also mini grid hybrid and smart grid systems. We also look at solar power systems, waste-to-energy systems, small grid applications. Any application of energy that can result in job creation is being looked at as well. There are some that are easy to implement, and others that are going to take a bit longer. But in essence, our program is designed to teach people skills on how to use the technology, how to construct yourself, how to maintain it, and how to create any opportunities around energy. And it's not just energy provision, it's also energy saving. So even in house construct houses that are more thermal efficient, create a job opportunity. Because not so many people understand what insulation involves and how to create insulation to reduce the energy consumption and improve their lifestyle. In essence, what we've done so far is we've created 60 jobs out of the program thus far. This is for 34 team alone, where we've got 1,394 work days and a total of 44 paying days. Just some examples to share with the honourable members. This is in Ilembe in Gwedwe, and this is on the KZN Northern Coastline, and this is where we've actually created digestive biogas digesters. We don't just introduce biogas digesters, we also teach them how to introduce anti-ecological processes that help them to grow products. They use the fertilizer that's generated from the biogas digesters. This is a solar project that was done for COP 17 in Durban, with, together with Isikini Metro as well as 42 manufacturers of the concentrated PV technology. So the technology produces about 500 kilowatts of electricity. In the Eastern Cape, we're also producing gas from our biogas digesters. We also teach them how to measure and to monitor the gas production and also the ecological processes that go with that. This is an example of how we introduce those cool gardens for them when they use the fertilizer from the digester to actually do that. In terms of our budget, for last year we had a budget of 190 million. Most of it was sourced by MTEC, but we also have a sizable contribution from donors as well as rollovers from prior years. For this year we have a budget of 247 million, which has gone up mainly as a result of the contribution towards our carbon storage program, as well as from certain donors as well. Those donors in my last slide, relates to organizations such as the Venture Development Agency, the EU Smart Metering Project, which is substantial, and then also from the private sector that contributes towards our carbon capture and storage programs such as Petrol, that are present today, Eskom, Anglo, and some of the other mining houses, and our Norwegian government as well. So we've got quite a bit of income that now comes in from donors, that include GIZ, REAP, which is our Renewable Energy Efficiency Partnership, and the Danish Embassy. So I've rushed through that. I apologize to you, but I'm going to try to keep to the 20 minutes as best as I can. Thank you.
Manager Clean Energy, and then Manja Shala, who's our group communication manager, Manja. Uh-huh. And then we bought one for our subsidiaries here, which is Petrol SA. Notice the Norway Makamu is the CEO. And then we've got the Amalu Shuri, Vice President Corporate Affairs. We've got Mona Stone, the Government Relations Manager. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Father, I will check that thing. Our exchange is that my chair, third chair for the World Production. One of the members, friends, colleagues, some quite new, like myself and some of the team members that we have here. It is always a great honor and sincerely a wonderful privilege to be here in front of a highly energetic portfolio committee on energy. We always cherish these moments. All panel identities work after being here at the end of the time. I wish I could come here every week. My name is Cesar Mulambo. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Central Energy Fund and the division unit I alluded earlier. It's also a group of companies. Among others, there is just a short and brief presentation as well of that. And for today, to give an overview, we talk a bit about Seth, her parents, who is Seth, why we exist. We look at our challenges. I will pause a bit before we talk elaborate on the challenges and share with you one or two key achievements over the last year or so. I think we made good progress, a lot of pride, and a very pride in the country. But I would like to brag a bit at that moment before we talk about all the problems that we have. We are very able to deal with those problems because we put some really important take up water sustainability and responsibility. Our objectives are very clear for this year. In support from the board that we currently have, and I'd like to call the base because I saw one of our board members in the audience, if you can allow me, Chair, just introduce him as well, Mr. Riyad Chowdhury, right there at the back. We get great support from our board. We get lots of challenges, even from the department, to make progress. So our strategic objectives, not only are they aligned with the department's objectives, but they do ensure that ourselves, we deliver as an agent, as a catalyst for the department in implementing some of these key programs. We talk about financial results, the share with two companies. We need to be able to stand alone and be sustainable and deliver financial performance and be able to invest as the stakeholder around us, as we are very successful. And then way forward, primarily on the short-term objectives, there are financial, there are around human resources, and there are also operational. So today, Honorable Chair, I would like to just give the portfolio committee an overview of who SAP is, the strategic entity, and what we do. I would like to share with you at a very, very high level our objectives, our plans, the vision that is currently emerging, the policy vision in 2025, is our illustration of the bold ambition of what we'd like to do in this space. We also want to talk to you and seek some guidance and seek some support from the committee on how we can strengthen our organization going forward. The high level, why do we exist? Primarily our mandate is about financing and promoting the acquisition, exploration, manufacture, marketing for the purpose of providing national security of energy supply in this country. Our intent is quite clear to provide energy resources while minimizing undue environmental impact on our country. And we are aligned and we are very much in support with our government policies. We want to be the leader in financing as well as development, implementation of sustainable energy solutions in the whole of Africa. We want to dominate the space of energy and demonstrate leadership as we move forward with our energy. We want to grow the sector, but we'd like to also be clear that our role, our mission, is to be a catalyst in this sector. When we show you the roadmap from the 1950s all the way up to about 2010 and beyond, Central played a major role in the creation of entities, incubation of those entities, and unleashing those tendencies into the private space to ensure that we can create more space for ourselves and do more things in this country. We've been very, very instrumental, for example, in the creation of the first world in this country. That was very key. And I will show you now from 1950, our investments in SASO and how we spun it off in the 80s to ensure that SERP really plays a meaningful role of facilitating the space of investment in the energy sector. We were founded under the SERP Act, and I will just show you that at length what the SERP Act is all about. I will take most of the damage on the writing there as being read, but the purpose of the SERP Act primarily, or the purpose of SERP primarily in terms of the Act, is to give to the objectives, or to give effect to the objectives of the Central Energy Fund, which in the area is that money paid under Subsection 1 of the Central Energy Fund shall be utilized in accordance with the direction of the Minister of Mineral and Energy. Since 2009, the DG did speak about the split between the minerals and energy into one department, DOE, and then another department, DOR. So we see minerals and energy while it's in that Act. The reference now will be just the Department of Energy. That's in a nutshell one of the key objectives that sits within the SERP Act, and we subscribe to that. Our role primarily is a Schedule 2 public enterprise established under the Act. We operate in the energy sector. We are covered by the PFLA in terms of all our dealings as well as our other things. Primarily our role is to contribute to security of energy. We are involved in the search of appropriate solutions. I will talk to you about our entities in oil. I will talk to you about our entities in gas. One entity in coal, and we've got a very enterprising division in renewable energy and alternative sources of energy in this division. So we are sitting on four pillars, if I may say. And let me just show you those pillars, the entities within which we operate. We've got IGES, a strong pillar, gas infrastructure, pipeline running from Mozambique all the way to Secunda. Since about 2000, IGES has been operating the gas infrastructure. We've got Petroate in oil, in gas, offshore. We are involved in key offshore drilling programs, as well as key investments in upstream as far as Ghana, and also retails for wholesale and distribute liquid fuel products in South Africa. Strategic fuel funds, the old key and strategic stocks, they hold the largest oil terminal in this country, about 45 million barrels of crude that we store in our terminal, just one area in South Ghana. And about another 7 or 7.5 million barrels of food that we can store in the United States. Carter, founded just under 10 years ago, involved with promotion and licensing and regulating the oil and gas space. And then African Exploration is involved in the mining of coal, exploration of coal, and they're currently selling more than 1 million tons of coal a year to ESCOM, a very key entity that we do at Coal 3 and all the build programs that are taking place in this country. So we see contributions from pillars are shared. The key energy division was founded under the high level business plan of 2003, involved in clean energy, in renewable energy, very strong investments in soil, very good projects that we've done recently, even in some support for the department on renewable energy issues, and are very, very key. And the aspiration under the clean energy division is in the future we'll roll it up as an entity and see it flourish and catalyze the space of clean energy and clean energy development in this country. We will talk more about these entities, Honorable Chair, when we come back and give you more details in terms of their performance. So we'll show you the details of their projects and what they are doing now, as well as in terms of all their goals and individual aspirations. Because it is individual experience that was strong and powerful vision in support of the overarching goal. In a nutshell, on an organogram basis, these are the entities that we have. And I did say to the chair that before we talk about our challenges and what has been seizing us, you know, over the past year, I think we've done quite well. I mean, we've restructured the organization. the structure that it is today, probably 2 years ago, we could fill 2 or 3 pages. We consolidated our efforts. We streamlined our activities. We now have a very clear separation coming from our board. In fact, and foremost, in terms of our restructuring, we look at all the governance structures and the leadership structures. I can confirm to you that our board has got the right skills matrix, very much aligned with what we want to deliver going forward. We call it PMAC, the Project Assessment and Monitoring Committee, that really drives our ability to ensure that the project that we are dependent on, the project that Macari is working on, are delivered the most to create the most viable entity. We've restructured the organization now at group level, at corporate level, and the board structure has laid a very strong foundation for us to be able to operate in a long-term sustainable and succumb. We're moving ahead at leadership level. We've got a very clear HR strategy approved by board. The skills are now in place. We filled more than 4 vacancies of CFOs last year. You can imagine, Chair, when we operated about 2-3 years ago, the company had 4 CFO vacancies. And in the group of companies, themselves are involved in CFOs in the group. At head office level, Mr. Chimunye, at corporate A level, we fill the CFO vacancies at FFF, as well as African Exploration. We made great progress in terms of capacitating the organization to deliver on the mandate and the expectation of board. We clean up our portfolio, as I've said, Felix Madero is no longer there, he's cleaned up. Santa, cleaned up. We've done a lot of work with regards to Dani and the KC Energy, and no longer there. We've really consolidated our portfolio to ensure that the self group is streamlined, is aligned, is focused and determined to deliver all the activities that we plan to deliver. AE as well as EGAS, as you see out there, we've done a lot of work last year and we are clear on the imperatives. We will be presenting the next steps and the proposals to our principals. We've given them enough time, the required news, but we'll share with them all the ideas that came up in terms of the proposed modalities that we want to engage with regard to AE as well as IGAS. The 40-year scholar path feasibility study in the Northern Cape, both Crispa and Huffington, is going to serve the cabinet over the next few weeks. We've done exceptionally well with regard to our downstream acquisition. We've made good traction, we've made progress. We are now just about to receive the news in regard to how we're going to fund those kind of activities. So very good progress and a lot of achievements made over the last year or so. We do see the challenges, as I have said, at a very high level. The issue of feedstock preparation does hold a challenge. We are still currently with the crazy gas. And once we reach finality on the crazy gas, we still need to look at solutions beyond 2019 around gas and its challenges. Recent trend of 10, the issue of the NGAS EA, which we spoke about earlier on and faster, as well as just our own ability to find large scale problems in a world of competing resources and very, very high cash reserves. The roadmap to really respond to the challenges with our Vision 2025 being in development and potentially under Vision 2025 check is all about the 3 pillars. Stabilize, make sure that organization is stable. We've dealt with all the housekeeping issues. We've dealt with the cost consideration of the business. And we've decided to choose those investments that will help us to be sustainable in the long term. The growth agenda is about choosing the investments that will grow and ensure that we are sustainable, diversified as an organization. And the domination is really about how we dominate our core base, how we achieve market leadership, how we achieve thought leadership, how we become the chosen and the preferred partner insofar as energy security supply is concerned. The whole about the domination space. The key projects that will support us under stabilize housekeeping project equity is key. The group strategy lays a strong foundation for us in terms of what are we going to do upstream, what do we need to do midstream in terms of infrastructure, what can be done downstream in terms of being a gas aggregator and marketing. How can we reposition ourselves in support of the government ICT program should government choose to use gas to penetrate this market instead of energy needs? Can you support that and provide infrastructure? Can you support that and build the upstream development? Can you support that in terms of field marketing of gas so that by the time the policy comes through, the confidence is apparent that gas could be made available? And when they appoint their IEPs, they know there's a lot of support coming from amongst other entities, central and the part. So it's very key that we deliver on all these projects. You know, and at the time we like that, the growth led as well as the dominant led. Our objective, we are 2 slides away in the interest of time. At a very high level, objective one, to really contribute to the traditional supply, clean energy projects are quite key. Future talks, conversations are very key, and how we continue to find new fields in the coal space in support of AE. Developing funding, I spoke about the world of very scarce resources. Technical projects, by their very nature, they require funding. So how we model our cash flows is very important, and how we mobilize various sources of funding, different needs for sources of funding, so that we can realize our goals in terms of choosing the right projects. That we feel we can support the agenda of security of energy supply. People will always be the most important asset. Developing a high-performance culture, a high-performance organization, supported by the right group policies and systems is going to be quite key to enable us to deliver the agenda. Share compliance, working in a safe environment, ensure that people's health is protected, people's lives are not an issue when they operate in our workspace. They are very important, and how we monitor and ensure that we comply with those objectives is going to be really integral in our operations. We really need to make sure that SAF is central. It's central in the coordination, in the harmonization of our entities. It's central in ensure that the value in our entities is structured, and all the other activities of those entities comply with what our stakeholders expect them to do. So the group alignment is very key, ensuring that the different parts of SAF can work harmoniously as one, and some of each part are being greater than the whole. I will skip these 2 slides because they pretty much elaborate on the strategic objectives that I've highlighted, and then I will close by just sharing with you provisional results. This is as at the 31st of May. We are subject to the audit process. But what I would like to share is to look at just the numbers from 2015 and beyond, how we plan to perform going forward, and how much cash we'd like to bring to the home in support of all our projects and programs going forward. And last but not least, Chair, I can say that our objectives, our priorities for 2014-2015 will really be around being clear on our financial objectives. Cost will be quite key in holding subsidiaries accountable insofar as our own cost performance, improvement in oversight, and very, very key. Investment selection through the PMEC. I think we are at a very good run rate, given what we've done over the last year. The project that we've selected, the river that has gone beyond integrating the variable projects and the evidence, has been very, very key. We need to also look at the whole culture across the group, make sure that we can epitomize what we want to call a one-self group culture, and everyone of those components of the group fully understand that they belong to one group. We've got different forums that enable us to do that. The CEO forum is one of those forums that is beginning to take us towards one self group, and harmonization of policies will take us towards one self group. Operational priorities, how we execute on them, become quite key, ensuring that we improve systems, we improve our processes, we improve our controls, we address the issue of infrastructure that is disproportionately professional, and make sure that we intend the ship around and ensure that we've got a strategy that is very strategic and forward-looking and very much in the long term. We need to also remember we are a state agent and a state entity, so the issue of developmental goals, developmental focus is not only about publishers and commission only. We need to own up to some of the mistakes of the past in this country and correct them through ensuring the right developmental objectives are also enshrined in the things that we do. And we are proud to have done quite a lot of issues in the developmental phase and supporting of the historically disadvantaged of Africa. On the human capital registry, the full strategy has been approved. We implementing a strategy, ensuring that we are a leader-led organization. We have talent engagement, and we show that we can retain talent, develop a strong value proposition, very, very competitive with the private sector amongst our people. Executive coaching strategy is very, very key. And all the other issues that would create SAP to be one of the transformational leaders in the space of human resources and human capital management. I will leave you at that point, Chair, and say as a group, we'd like to extend an invitation to the community in the future. We've got very key, exciting, and strategic sites around the country. We are the first to actually commission a gas physical plant in the world. We can take you there, we can take you to our platforms, offshore operations, coal mining installations, big strategic tank installations that we have all over the country. Without further ado, then I will hand everything back to the chair, unless my own chair or the deputy minister would like to say one or two words.
That invitation, Honorable Lord Mayor, we have a difficulty. That's what I said. How long will you say? Honourable members, we agree that we will leave this thing at the stop as fast. I don't think this is 5 minutes. We will not be more fast. We will have it's quite an hour that we will not be able to afford the question.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, Chairman of the SAF Group, Honorable Members, Ladies and Gentlemen. In the interest of time, Chairman, I'm just going to do a few slides because my Chairman has covered most of the pertinent issues, including the challenges that we're facing. But I thought maybe it would be good just to point out, as a national oil company, we've developed a strategic plan that does support government policy, including the NDP. So our national development, strategic plan, Chair, supports the NDP. Amongst other initiatives in the NDP, for a short-term perspective, it is stated that we should develop offshore gas, domestic exploration drilling, for economically recovered shale gas reserves, promoting investment in liquefied natural gas landing infrastructure, introduce cleaner fuel, and then in the medium term, is the energy infrastructure which will be in place to power the first closed cycle gas turbines, and then later on a decision will be made on whether RSA to continue with imports or investment in new refineries. So in the next one of the slides is just to demonstrate how our strategic plan actually addresses the issues that are raised in the NDP. And I thought that before I go into that, maybe it would be good just to share that we have made progress since our last CP implementation. And so we've continued to operate well, in spite of the very challenging conditions that we find ourselves in. As the committee knows, we've got declining feedstock, and currently they are stuck at the rising feedstock costs due to the fact that deep water offshore exploration, as the committee knows, becoming more and more difficult and more expensive. From a Sheikh perspective, safety, health, environment and quality, we are proud to say that we have continued to operate within the target safety standards, and we have managed to retain our ISO 9001-2008 quality qualification. Our key focus area, Chairman, remains the sustenance of our Moscow Bay refinery. So the Chairman has alluded to the fact that we have offshore drilling by way of equity projects that is progressing. We also have an active development plan where we're trying to study how we can actually secure long-term business solutions for the Moscow refinery. And we will be presenting that business case at the end of the financial year. Chair, going on to the next slide since the last presentation, we are also busy with the Toba refinery project. And what we're currently doing now, Chair, when we say funding is being finalized and tried, what we mean is the funding for the feasibility study. Because what we've done currently is the feasibility study, and now we are looking at trying to go into the feasibility study. So we're currently doing, we're in discussions with different partners in terms of that. On the LNG project, it is continuing to gather momentum. Since the last presentation, we are now going to do the environmental impact analysis and process. And just to remind the members that this is for the importation of LNG to oil cells for power generation, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, that we'll be looking at changing the energy mix in the country, and therefore, ESCOM will be looking to transform some of their turbines to utilize gas for power generation. With regard to the acquisition that we made in Petro de Ghana, we continue to produce there, and that asset is providing substantial, much-needed income to Petro de. From a transformation perspective, Chair, we have finished work on the first IEC in 2012, and now we're working on the second IEC in Kamata. Our enterprise development supplier program has also gained traction. We didn't perform very well in the previous period. But we now have a number of companies that identify for the first program. From a preferential procurement perspective, we continue to perform well from a preferential procurement perspective. And we have also established, Chair, you're pleased to know, a women's forum, which is a platform for women to discuss and advance the issues of common interest in our area of work, which is in the oil industry. And, Chair, our chairman has previously alluded to the challenges that we face, but I think by far the most important, the most overarching challenge is the challenge that we face of declining feedstock, because that has a direct impact on the sustainability of our Moscow refinery. What has also happened, Chair, is that we are now facing increased competition for hydrocarbon assets, even around the coast of South Africa. So we are not there as before, we were one of the few that were operating off the coast of South Africa in the quest for looking for gas and oil around our coast. Now are faced with increasing competition for the assets, which is a good thing in the sense that there is more interest, but also bring with it some more very interesting challenges that we have to deal with. And of course, my chairman alluded earlier to the fact that with all the projects that we have to do from a sustainability perspective, we are faced with funding limitations, and therefore we have to proceed with those projects proceed with those projects with the approach from a partnership perspective due to the funding limitations that we face. Chair, what I did not do before I began was maybe give a very brief overview of the company. Just to state that we were established in 2002. We employ more or less about 1,900 total staff. We do span the whole value chain and the oil business. We're currently producing much, a little bit less than about 3 to 5% of the fuel needs, and Chair will agree that for a national oil company, we should be producing much more than that to have impact and to be able to roll out the government policy. Chair, maybe just for also for information, in the last 20 years of our existence, and just to think, TechSA is a company that's been in existence in 2002, and was formed as a merger between Mosgas and Suco, which were formed much earlier than that. So in total, the company or group as it exists today has been in existence for about 20 years. So since Mosgas came online, it has utilized 1 trillion cubic feet of gas to produce what I'm saying is about close to about 5% of the country's demand. And I think this is just important to note here when we talk about data, all our strategy in terms of shale gas and all the strategy that we are trying to that we support in terms of the exploration of shale gas, we think that only one CCS was utilized and we were able over the years to supply the country with sufficient petroleum products. We do share also have our upstream presence in South Africa, in our outside of South Africa, in Ghana and Equatorial Guinea. And we also exist in trading in Rotterdam. My chair has spoken about that. I just want to point out that one of the most important issues from our mandate is that we need to complement and promote government policy at a strategic class. So all the policy issues, all the policy approach that comes from the government perspective, it is expected and we are mandated to be able to give life to those government policies by way of our existence. And that is in our mandate. Also, we need to make sure that we are able to advance the national objectives from a transformation perspective in our industry. With all of that change, given the social economic mandate that we have, we are also expected to operate in the community so that we do create value for our shareholders. And therefore, share our vision is to be the leading African energy company, utilizing our proven technology and harnessing our human capital to be able to benefit the stakeholders. One slide, Chair, perhaps on our strategic plan, which has been spoken to again by my chairman, is just to say, in terms of our strategic plan, it does address, it does advance the shareholder security of supply objectives. It does strengthen our role as a sustainable national oil company. We also state, Chair, that it is a tough and capital intensive plan. And we also know that, Chair, over the next year, because we will be now investing into the rollout of some of these projects, our profitability over the next 2 years, we envisage a reduction over the next year whilst we engage in all the projects that are aimed at sustaining and growing sector estate. So we definitely, through the next 3 years, Chair, need very strong partnerships. We need access to funding, we need shareholder support, and of course we need a very good enabling regulatory environment and good governance, which my chairman has alluded to, that we have not structured very good governance structures for groups. And of course we need, and for all of this, we need to resource and capacitate the national oil company. This is just a picture illustrating what are the building blocks that we have towards building the PetroSA as a national oil company to be a sustainable, fully integrated, commercially competitive national oil company by 2020. We call it our vision 2020. And these are just the building blocks that say, having understood our challenges that we face and the current situation, having understood what is the roadmap as has been mandated earlier by my chairman, these are the building blocks that take us towards where we used to be as a national oil company over the next few years, which encompasses the period of the strategic plan. Chair, I won't go into a lot of detail, but perhaps maybe I must just conclude by saying that the strategic plan does support the federal government's development agenda. We are focusing on sustainability. We are focusing on growth. And all of this is going to assist us as well to support transformation meaningfully. It does sustain our GPL refinery, saving jobs. Also, it does look at how we can diversify federal income, ensuring sustainability. It does ensure that we have a presence in the downstream market. It does ensure that we respond to the energy mix by way of making sure that the liquefied natural gas import facility for power generation and high-value petrochemicals is going to be able to create long-term value. And it also, as I said, helps us to move towards promoting transformation and advancing social equity and organizational capacity. My chairman, the CEO of Petrol Energy Fund, went into a lot of detail, and I just want, in the interest of time, I just want to give assurance to the committee that our plan is fully aligned to the plan of the group and the plan of government policy. Thank you, Chair.
I want to say that
we submit our questions to the doctor to forward it to the respective entities. During our panel, there will be never any discussion on this, but our intention is meeting again on the 8th. So between now and then, we should have the minutes of the meeting, the indication of what questions have been answered, what possibly this should have been taken and in response to the question. I'm sure by that time, the questions that have been submitted today will have been answered. One to suggest another one day that I tell you start meeting by tomorrow the two questions.
Yeah, I mean that's fine, sure. I understand the limitations, but I wanted to speak to this particular issue of how we deal with questions and going forward. It's just that, I mean, I have a suggestion as well. And it's sitting based on my time that I've spent in the committee of the last 5 years. And what I noticed is often a trend is that the parliamentary rule often gets overruled in terms of the presentations are supposed to reach us 3 days before. And I think it would really help us get these presentations to reach us 3 days before. We could go through it as individual members. And the presentations that get presented to us are a very short version, so that you really got maximum time for engagement with the entity, rather than just having to sit and listen to them present to us the whole day. And I just think that would really help sharpen the debate and really allow us to interrogate the issue. So I'm just asking that in the future we can possibly use for that. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks for that input. We would appreciate that we were part of our class of overruling the rules that we should comply with because of the time pressures we had. We'll endeavor to ensure that in the future we get the presentation of something that we can put in service. One thing of that request is I noticed that in most of the presentations, so that was a short time was most of the time. So having the exception of one presentation, no one can indicate that was spoken in very summary in the lower version. Tell me that an update about all of the issues that you mentioned and our real request that focus is not so much on the fact that we get in this at this point, the 2 minutes, are there anything to
say? Both Minister and myself are new to the portfolio, so preparations for this meeting actually forced us to do the things which we had said over a longer period, but it has been good. We are on a steep learning curve, but we feel we will be up to the challenge. I think the entities and the department are all ready to, everybody ready to work and realize that the whole nation is looking at us and other departments in terms of making sure that we grow our economy. I would also want to really thank the members because I believe they have to hold us accountable, but I believe they're also our partners. I'm sure we should succeed on guiding us and making sure that we deliver for the people of God. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Minister, that you released. Thank you for coming and spending the whole day here.